It's time now for Penalty Spot. Brought to you with the best wishes of the Barbados Football Association. Let's say good evening to Paul Mears.
Well, good evening to you, Larry. Good evening to all of our listeners on Penalty Spot. And my pleasure to welcome you to another edition of the program. And coming up on today's program, the English Premier League is back with a clash between Man City and Arsenal. We're going to get some reaction from the analysts. And, of course, we'll take your calls at 4341-790. Former national player Trevor Thorne is our star player today. And in the club corner, we feature the Blues out of Bank Hall in Pyre. We go to Port of Spain for the latest on the battle between FIFA and former executives of the Trinidad Football Association. And we hear from one of the attorneys, Dr. Emir Crow. Penalty Spot in association with the Barbados Football Association. And welcome back to the program. Of course, the football world is beginning to get busy again, but we're going to start this time at home. And our first stop on today's Penalty Spot, we're going to travel down, not too far from the studios, down to Bank Hall, and a small ground nestled in the Bank Hall area called the Empire Ground. And we're going to begin today with our very special club feature. And today we are featuring the Empire Club. And when you hear the name Empire, quickly comes to mind. We think quickly about some of those great cricketers that have been produced by that wonderful club in Bank Hall, the Blues. But today we're talking football. They have a rich history of football also. And joining us to talk a little bit about the club is Michael Alcock. Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening. And thanks for having me.
Welcome to Penalty Spot. And this evening we're talking Empire Club and football. And first of all, Michael, for the listeners who might not know too much about you, tell us a little bit about yourself and your relation with the club.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to thank the members of the club, the former executives who had worked diligently to get the club to where it is today. We've been a club with many championships and many difficulties along the way. And I'd like to thank people like Mr. Rob Branca, Tony King. There's so many to call, but they were nowhere in the end, and to keep the club in the way it's been going for the last couple of years. But me, I started out as a member of the club in 1977, immediately after leaving St. Leonard's School and playing for the Polytechnic at the time. And in those years when I joined, we were not the glory team that we were once in the 50s, part of the 60s, and part of the 70s. During those years, I would have played with many captains. There was Trevor Parse. He'd been one of the influential persons in my life when I first joined the club. I played and captained the team in the 80s, and it was at that point where we were trying to rebuild a team. We were doing very well, and then the club was making a change to the outfield, and at that point in time, we had to abandon the football season for that year. I think it was somewhere in the mid-80s, I think 83, 84. And it would put a damper because the players we had at that time all left to play for the major clubs, because at that time, the Wales were recruiting players, and many of our players left and went to Wales, Black Spurs, some went to Notre Dame. But it was a difficult time. And when we came back, we had asked the BFA to allow us to start back in the second division. But we had to start back in the fourth division and work ourselves back up. And besides football, I also played hockey. So I was in between both the hockey and the football team. Some of the captains I would have played with under the football umbrella would have been Carlo Baino. He passed recently. And Trevor Parse, as I mentioned before. Reston Downs, Ronald Bailey, sorry. And we had a lot of players from around. It was really a community effort because most of the players were from around the Bike Hall area. And we tried our best to bring back that glory to the club. But at the time, as I said, you know, a lot of the players had gone on to greener pastures.
You said the club had to go back and work the way up from fourth division. How tough was that?
Oh, it was very tough in the beginning. And some of our supporters, I can recall Selwyn Bartlett. He was one of our dear friends, along with a Ricardo Hines from the Garden Lion. He, Ling Fong, who recently passed, that's his Selwyn Bartlett brother. He looked at the team and he said to me, "Mike, you wanted help." And I'm going to, he was playing for Everton at the time. And he said, "Mike, I'll come and give you that help. And I'll bring along a few of the guys." And that's where we started. Huh? We started to rebuild from there. And there was Audie Carrington. He was at Coors Empire still. Carson Ford, who turned out to be one of Empire's leading goal scorers. And we built from there. And it was a real difficult task. We always had a big fight to regain that position with the team from Britain's Hill. And the Empire and Britain's Hill always had that camaraderie. They played in the fourth, third, until we made it back. Then Selwyn came and he provided us with a lot of help. He was our main striker and he assisted me tremendously in getting the guys together, along with Reston Downs, Ronald Bailey, Andre Carrington. He had left and then he came back, and Stephen Gill and Carl Proverbs, who many would call a club hopper because he played for so many clubs. But he was at Everton. He was at Notre Dame. He started at Empire, or he was with us first. But he was grabbed by some of the top clubs. So we really worked really hard of making a name for ourselves. Actually, when we were in the fourth division, we were playing so good. And we made it. It was some controversy between Empire and Belfield. But in the end, we were promoted. And then in the third division, when we got there, the folks, I went to Burkett, a couple of guys from the area and from that school, and we needed help. I went to John Murray and a couple of the other guys, Andre Carrington, Tony Carrington, the Carrington clan. And we all said, "Look, this is our club. This is our community. We must bring the team back," along with the Mears boys, along with the Boyns, you know, and we fight our way back to the third division. And at that point, we were being called the Giant Killers because we were beating teams in higher division in the knockout competition. That year, we did really well. But sadly, we lost to better teams, Pinelands. And we were playing well up to the point where they run rings all around us.
At what stage, you know, looking back now, you know, you came in the late 70s, work, you played into the 80s. Then you had guys like Trevor Thorne and those coming into the mix-up. What would you say would be the so-called glory years for the club in football?
The glory years would have been in the 90s. In 91, when they won the championship. And that was a good feeling for the Bank Hall community, who was starved of a trophy for so many years. I can remember that evening like it was yesterday. Charles Allen, the president at the club at that time, he bought drinks. He was in glee because he was a former captain of the club, and it was many years that we didn't win a championship, and he was overly delighted. And we celebrated long from the stadium right back to Bank Hall. We were celebrating all of Bank Hall, Ling Pong, all the followers. We had a great time seeing Imperial back in top flight and doing well.
Club has been, over the last few years, back in the top flight again and has been doing quite well.
You know,
it must be a good feeling.
Yeah. I mean, after my captaincy, I had given away to Cedric Lynch, and he had just came over from Everton too, and I say, look, Cedric, you brought a whole set of Commemorians with you, and they came over to the club, and I stepped down from captain, and Cedric took over from me, and the talent that he brought, you know, served the club well, because he bought the Barker boys. He bought Ronnie Barker and his brother. He bought the Junior Barker, Thorne, Ivo Oxley, Andre Carrington came back, Tony Carrington was back, the Mears boys were in control at that time. You had so many names I can't call all, but they came back and really made Empire what it was. Maurice Gaskin, you know, Jeffrey Marvel. It was a team that was properly gelled, thanks to the management at the time. And we worked from there. I mean, we were a bit disappointed, those of us who were playing fourth and third. But when it got to that level, obviously they needed new blood. And we had the help of some stages, Donovan from the NCF. National Sports Council, sorry. He came over and helped us. And we did well. Training was important, and we did that. We got the support from the club. The club was happy to see football in the top flight again. And with Trevor Thorne and the big names coming over, I'm sure it made Colin Mears and Roger Mears and the management team quite happy. Ivo Oxley was one of the players we had in the French, along with Cedric Lynch. Selwyn Bartlett, as old as he was, he might not forgive me for saying that, but he still provided the support up front that we needed, and he can recall on at any time. We had the evergreen Robert Nathaniel Bird. He and I were staying in the lower division, despite at that time we felt that we could still make it in the higher division, but we knew where our place was. But Carson Ford, the new crop, they brought life to the club. Maurice Gaskin and that crowd, you know, Frank Williams, a diehard supporter, and a never say never die member of the team. You know, we did well, and thanks must go to the management team.
Yeah. We are almost out of time. You have another 30 seconds left. In that time, I want you to tell me, what makes Empire Club so special for you?
Well, Empire Club is special for me because, one, we have that never say die spirit. We encourage community. It's a community, one of the few clubs on the island right now where you can go to any day of the week. And we are still participated in three sporting disciplines. That is cricket, football, and hockey. Many of the more established clubs are not in that anymore. So, and we are celebrating 106 years. That's what makes it special for me, and being a black club.
Wonderful. But Michael Elcock, thank you so much for joining us this evening and sharing those wonderful memories of the Empire Club in Bank Hall. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you. Have a good evening, folks.
And from the Bank Hall ground, we're going to head across to Port of Spain. And one of those stories that has been developing daily, so to speak, that battle between the governing body for football, FIFA, and the former executives of the Trinidad and Tobago Football Association, led by William Wallace. Well, the latest, we had that the former executive, they had abandoned the idea of going to the Court of Arbitration. They've taken FIFA to the High Court in Trinidad. And this evening, we're going to hear from one of the attorneys for the TTFA, Dr. Emir Crow. He's going to give his perspective of what has been happening there.
United TTFA still holding out hope for mediation. Their case against FIFA has been lodged before the High Court via New City Chambers Law Firm and was responded to this week through the law offices of Dr. Claude Denbu, representing FIFA, which filed their entry of appearance in the High Court on Tuesday. One of the attorneys for United TTFA, Dr. Emu Krong, spoke on the Morning Edition, reminding everyone why his client opted to make a stand.
William Wallace and his executives, they came in on a slate of principle, right? So they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because I hear people, you know, these pundits in the media saying, oh, you know, we should have never gone to CAS, we should have never gone to the High Court, we should just let FIFA do what they want. But what message does that send on a point of principle?
Krong reiterated his position that mediation may be best served in the matter, but wants FIFA to lay their position.
Quite frankly, we can have a mediation this weekend and solve it by Monday. But I think it may be beneficial, at least for FIFA's side, for them to put their position out there so that everyone in the room has a sense of the strength of their position. Because like I say, everyone in litigation in any case will tell you they have the strongest case on earth. And so there may be benefit. FIFA may well want to do that before mediation occurs. And I understand that. But it doesn't preclude us from having a mediation this weekend or next week.
Dr. Krong also referenced the case with Dexter St. Louis, Rayan Chung, and the local Table Tennis Federation, which went to mediation on the eve of that High Court matter, where they settled for the benefit of their sport. The attorney was even given a scenario where William Wallace and his team actually won at trial, and FIFA suspends TNT football.
If it does go to trial and it is heard and we prevail, I would hope that FIFA as an organization has seen enough disputes that it would at least recognize the decision of the court. Like if we fought the point in jurisdiction and FIFA accepted it and went through the process, then I would hope that FIFA would be organizationally mature enough to respect the decision. And look, this is why I think, again, mediation is a good outcome for everyone involved.
Dr. Krong says if FIFA suspends TNT football, which he says no one wants, then the Court of Arbitration for Sport is again an option.
That's Dr. Emir Krong speaking from Trinidad and Tobago as they get the very latest from the ongoing impasse involving the normalization committee and, of course, the FIFA appointed normalization committee, I should say, and the former TTFA executive. And that's an impasse which has so far shown no real signs of coming to a conclusion. And we really, really hope for football's sake that we can have that ratified as soon as possible. As we continue, the Penalty Spot in association with the BFA. Our next stop is the player profile. Today's player profile, we get up close and personal with the man who has all the tricks, flicks, set plays, dead balls, whatever you want to call it, Trevor Thorne. And as you would have heard earlier, we were featuring the Empire Club. And Trevor also, and Empire stalwart. Good evening to you, Trevor. Welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Curtis. Good evening to the Stockholm network of fans as well, all across the world, I understand.
Yes, indeed. Let's take it all the way back to the beginning. A young Trevor Thorne, what would have been the first club you would have represented as you got your football career up and running?
Righty. First of all, Curtis, let me say thank you very much to the very evergreen sportsman and my teammate at one stage, Michael Elcock, for his kind words about the Empire Club and their history. But let me hop all the way back to foreign lands, Curtis, because many may not know it, but I was born and raised in football crazy England in the 60s, Birmingham to be precise. Played through my school, primary, secondary, was relatively successful in those eras as well, and was called to something called the Midlands County team to represent the Midlands, that's the Birmingham area and so on, in the schoolboy championships at the old Wembley Stadium, to be precise. So that went very well. In 1975, my whole family decided to come back to Barbados. So me being a youngster, just about to end school, I took the trip back, and I fell in love with Barbados from the very first day touchdown, which left me with a bit of a dilemma as to how it was going to operate, if I was going to go back to England and try to get a spot in England to play football, or if I would take on the challenge of playing in Barbados and hopefully get a national spot, allowing me to play competitively at the highest level. That would be national football, and therefore we would get World Cup qualifiers and also Caribbean Cup matches as well. So I chose to start my career at the YMCA, actually, with the likes of Phil Braffitt and Jeffrey Body Marshall, Patrick Potty Hewitt and his brother Dana, the Clark brothers, Shirley and Bernard Clark. We were under the tutelage of a Trinidadian by the name of Ansel Marquez. He's a legend, both here and in Trinidad. And I would have played my first set of football at the YMCA on Pinfold Street, tried to make my mark there, basically. And then I started to move through the ranks, basically. I was spotted by Reggie Haynes and Horace Tobacco Beckles from Everton. And they laid out the red carpet for me to come to a team by the name of Harris Paints Everton FC, played in green and white at that time. And that hooked me up with the likes of Michael and Kendrick King, Dennis Haywood, Trevor Turbo, Alan B, and lots more players. Too many to mention, as you say, but my career got off to a pretty good start as well. Playing right next to the likes of Haywood on one side, Alan B on the next, and me up front. I was able to supply me with the chances that was created, and the rest to say is history. Scored plenty of goals for Everton, and that took me on to my next challenge, which I'm sure you're going to ask me about, which is the Empire and the Mighty Blues.
So you were always the point man, always the striker in your football career?
Yep. I would interchange with Alan B and Haywood. More likely to be Alan B, who was very quick as well. And I too had the toes, so they would interchange Alan B with myself. I could play wide as well, left or right. I developed from UK days the ability to score or square with my left and right foot. That's always an advantage. And funny enough, your last week's guest, Gregory Lalu Goodrich, I insisted that he use his other foot. And that's, in a way, history will show that's in a way why he's so balanced in the way he plays. It's always better to have two weapons than one. So Goodrich, under my tips and tricks, I told him to develop that other foot, and he turned out to be a very good player as well. But yeah, I was snapped up then by Empire, who they too offered me the position up front and the captain's armband as well. And you know, you really can't refuse it if the captain's armband comes along with the responsibility of leading a team that would have come from fourth division straight to first, looking to win the title. And that gave me the ambition then to sign for Empire. And back in the year 90, I think that was 1990 or so, 89-90. Took me a little while to settle in. But by the time we got to 1991, the writing was on the wall. The team was a well-oiled unit. And we were able to take the title unbeaten, both league and knockout, in 1991.
Would you say then that 1991 season was your best season?
Well, it was the best season, I would say, as a captain and for the history of Empire itself, to lead such a prestigious team, a team that had all the pedigree all the way back in the 50s and the 60s. They would have run trophies back then, but there was a long, long period between then and 91. And when I saw the tools that I had to work with, the type of players that were there already seasoned and ready and raring to go, and obviously they gave me their backing. At that stage, we had the likes of young Robin Paris, a teenager, goalkeeper, excellent at football, hockey, and cricket. We went through the back line with right back Rodney Barker, left back Maurice Gaskin, Cedric Lynch and Ibo with the central pinning, and Jeffrey Marvel, defensive midfielder. Rotating the midfield a bit because there was lots of top midfielders there. Tyrone Wilkie came over from Wales, Stephen Graham, Michael Graham, Roger Honda Proverbs, who was the main outlet when it comes to setting the chances up for me a lot of the time. And then we had Ricardo Carrington, better known as Oddy, and his brother as well, Joe. And lots of assistants off the bench, Glenn Roy, Gibson, Carson Ford, Wilmot Sincere, Junior Walcott, Doctor, his nickname, and defenders like David Yearwood, Jerry Hall, and of course the team is as good as its last player off the bench, and of course the what we call the brain of the team, which would be the coaching of Andre Carrington, and he would have linked up with Colin Mears, Dookie Mears, assistant manager, Colin has been the manager, and for a period of time we had Gregory Gibson and Ronald Bailey in the team as well, as far as the administrative people go. There's a couple of other players as well that made the team very strong in those 2 years, the 1990-91. Matthew Clark, the likes of Dale Rudder was even playing for us, and Rufus Ivan Shepherd, the late Rufus Shepherd, who's gone on. But, you know, that's the main nucleus of the Empire team that would have done all the damage in 1991.
Well, Trevor, as we all know, you made on then to national duty, tasting some success. I know you always comment about one fateful miss. Good evening to Keith Grell. Griffith, I know he's locked on for sure. Tell us some more about Trevor Thornhill, the national striker.
Alrighty. So within the 89-90, my name was spoken of a few times about getting involved with the national team, but I had to wait quite some time before I got the call-up. But when I got it, I took it with both hands. What would have happened, though, Curtis, is that obviously because if you're born in the UK and your parents are Barbadian, you have the option to play for either England or Barbados. And as I say, I got so comfortable with what Barbados had to offer at the time, I decided to use that dual citizenship and make my way into the Barbados squad. At that time, the squad would have been coached by Kevin Millard, I believe it was that time. Yeah, very early, Kevin Millard. And Millard was in charge of the national team as well as launching a semi-professional unit called Lambada FC that would have toured through the region up to Miami to lock horns with teams from Mexico and Costa Rica and so on. So it provided a really good opportunity, not necessarily to turn pro fully, but get the taste of semi-professional football with Lambada, and then eventually a little stint with Beijing Superstars as well, which was another semi-professional team which came just after Lambada. Those teams consisted of players like players that actually went on to play professionally as well. Horace Stokes, the goalkeeper, who you would have featured earlier. Air Seeley was there. Philip Bragrove, Mike Seale. Those were the four top keepers in that era. Sweepers like Robert Lashley there, Melvin Ibo Oxley, Wayne Sobers, all of those were in these same squads. Wing backs like Rodney Barker, Maurice Gaskin, Jeffrey Marvel, one of the most solid defensive midfielders that you'll find anywhere in many eras as you compare them. And then you had lots of tricks from Roger Honda Proverbs, Hendy Williams, Dave Alleyne, he too played professionally in Ireland, Adrian Hall, and there's another gent, Eric Levine, who played his professional football in Ireland as well. Now lives in Germany, and he's recently earned the UEFA coaching license as well. So Eric could be of use to maybe the Barbados setup at some point in time. But yeah, that was the era of the national team, and it'd be remiss of me if I didn't thank a couple of people, the coaches that would have taken me there, the likes of Keith Griffith. Adrian Donovan had a piece of the action. Keith and Adrian teamed up for one stint in the Barbados squad as well. And with it, we also had the likes of, let's see, there was a stint there with a gent from Brazil by the name of Jorge Ramos, technical director. And funny enough, he was one that had a conversation with me. At that stage, as I said, he realized that I was in the national team, and I was also doing courses to do with football courses, FIFA courses, as well as refereeing courses while the national team were training and playing. He actually mentioned to me, well, if you're going to go that far, why not go into commentary, statistics, and be a well-rounded football person when you actually just about ready to finish playing football. So that prompted me then to add my IT skills, which all the way through the national team, I was doing the courses, passing my exams, playing national football at the same time. So it kept me in good stead to launch at this point what, as you know, Commentator Sports Incorporated. We offer commentary for Premier League, national games, and of course, only recently we've been doing some work with the BFA as well, as far as announcing those teams live and in living colour at the BFA Turf Valley whenever football is on.
As you would have played through several eras, Trevor, under several coaches, professional, semi-professional, as you mentioned now, going into the area of commentary for the past few years, what do you see as the biggest difference between the Premier League now and your playing days?
Okay, a lot of it at this point in time, to compare, it's a lot of it is down to the players themselves. In the 90s, let's say, through the 90s for sure, when I was deeply involved in football, hardly ever able to get home before 8 or 9 at night for different training sessions, be it either Empire Club, the national setup, the semi-pro Lambada and Beijing Superstars. But at that time, the players for me were more complete. To be a complete player, in my books, you have to be intelligent. You have to be a bit of a tactician. Know what to do when. Very competitive. And of course, quick in your thinking and quick in your execution as well. To me, those are the types of things that make a really good player. We had lots of those types of players playing in the 90s. They were able to understand the game, to me, a lot more than some players that we see nowadays. They're also able to control their emotions. As you can see, the type of incidents that players get in now with, easy as you like, yellow cards, which lead to red cards. In our day, it definitely wasn't that easy to throw a player off or get into a player's head. The players of former years, too, they were able to sustain themselves a lot better. They took personal care of their bodies, to me, a lot more, and that prevented injuries, which allowed them to be always available for coaches to pick and switch and swap your team according to who you're coming up against. The social life, I guess there was a lot less to do in those days. Yes, you would go to your average Saturday night party or dance or whatever, but you certainly wouldn't be out plenty of the days, like Tuesday and Thursday and then Saturday as well. So therefore, your body tended to stand up a lot better. So, you know, your social life was, I must say, a lot easier to manage in that way, and that probably added to a player's performance. And then, of course, there was, for me at this stage, I think there was a lot more people who were more conscious of going to church and so on. So they tended to be in church on a Sunday. And then in the week, yes, you would go to your football and you would still enjoy something, a night out on a Saturday night. But you do see now that, you know, you get to know players, you see them night by night. And then sometimes you're surprised to see that they're out.
And finally, Trevor, when we look at the current national setup, I was remarking to someone shortly before the program began that in terms of the structure we have now, the Future Tridents program, you have your own home for football, a dedicated facility, coaching from basically under 7 straight to the national team and beyond, technical director, senior coach, a highly rated senior coach in Russell Latipi. I'm of the opinion, this is my personal opinion, that in terms of the setup, at least the infrastructure, rarely have we had it this good in terms of Barbadian football. So for me, the onus is now on the current generation of players.
Well, it definitely is. The red carpet has been rolled out for the current batch of players and those coming beyond in the futures program as well. And basically what they will need to do now is to realize that, you know, being educated by things that we say on air, like this comparison that we're making this evening between former players and current players, and they will realize that they can take a leaf out of the books of some of the former players, how we used to prepare ourselves when we're on our own and when we come to training as well, and then our social life as well. If they can take those three things and then add them to all the upgrades that are going on at the BFA Turf Ability and all the opportunities that are available both when people are listening via the radio and, of course, when you watch it on TV, Trident 10 TV, broadcast all over the world, when you have all of that going for you, then you'd be foolhardy if you didn't take all that to heart and then realize there are grand opportunities for the young players that are coming through the ranks now. And if they apply themselves the correct way by taking a leaf out of the book of former players like yours truly, and I believe you would have Horace Stout, Anthony Daisy Clark, Norman Fordy, take some leaves out of those books there and use them as guidance going forward, then Barbados' football will go from leaps to bounds, leaps and bounds, and really make a mark around the CONCACAF and CFU region in the very near future.
Okay, thank you very much. That's commentator and former national player Trevor Thorne. Hope to see you very, very soon. Then we have the resumption of football. Everyone is counting down the days. Hopefully it happens and we can have the culmination of the 2020 Premier League season. But failing that, we'll be back at you bright and early in 2021. Once again, that's the voice of Trevor Thorne. Thank you very much, Trevor, as well, as we prepare to take a look at what has been happening internationally. Expected to be joined by, I believe it, tonight, be joined by Kenneth Onyekwe. He's going to be a very happy man. It's the news that the English Premier League is about to resume. And I'm hearing some background noise, so can I say good evening to you, Kenneth?
Good evening, sirs. Good evening, listeners.
You must be the happiest man in Barbados. Premier League football confirmed to resume very, very soon. And that means one thing and one thing only. Liverpool are going to win the title.
Of course. We won a trophy match, you know. It was delayed, but it was inevitable. You know, it's just for us to observe all protocols. So we're looking forward to the resumption of the Premier League.
Now let's take a look at what happened in the past few hours, past few days in Europe. Liverpool had training today, and they would have knelt in support of George Floyd,
yes,
who was unfortunately killed in the USA earlier this week and sparked,
yes,
riots and marches all over the world. Nice touch by the Liverpool team and in response to a scenario that has left everyone shocked in dismay. I don't even know how to describe it.
Well, it's a complex topic that is far too big and too complicated for a football program, but all our thoughts are, we can see what's happening on TV. My wife is watching CNN at the moment. It's an incredible scenario, but hopefully someday we'll get it right. It's not a simple issue to resolve. But I think the Liverpool Football Club is doing all the right things, especially in, you know, they've done everything right in terms of COVID-19 and their COVID-19 response. And they're getting it right again with George Floyd. You know, when you recall that Liverpool has quite a lot of minority players, a lot of mixed-race players and color players in the team. So they're getting it right, and they're getting the right response. You can see again that, you know, they've been very, very... In fact, you wouldn't notice is that Liverpool has been very conscious not to overplay that today is the first anniversary of our June 1st, 2019 Champions League win. You know, they've been done quite good PR with that. They're allowing the fans to do the celebration rather than carry on with that. So far, so good. We want to be charismatic champions, and we're looking forward to raising the trophy with someone or nobody in the stadium.
Well, there's some discussion about that. Where will the celebration be held? If it's best to have it outside the stadium at a neutral venue? I can tell you, I'm not a Liverpool fan, but in wherever that celebration is held, whichever ground, whichever location, there's going to be a crowd. We just hope that the distancing will be maintained.
Already, you know, you can't say it's just the Liverpool fans. You can already see in the UK, people already going out, going to parks and doing their thing. So I don't think they could just say it's because Liverpool won the trophy that a lot of people came out. You know, there's going to be a crowd somewhere. You know, if we're given the opportunity, I'm sure we'll have a parade in Barbados, a very social distance compliant parade in our cars. We have a lot of Liverpool fans there. We're looking forward to it. You know, a lot of clubs looking for. I think Jose is chomping at the bits to get back into the Premier League. I think they are far away from fourth spot, but there are a lot of trouble with teams ahead of them. Arsenal isn't in a good way. I'm glad to hear my son is here mentioning Arsenal. They're not in a good way, so it's a bit dicey. Yet today, a very, very good journalist mentioned that Arsenal is not planning to offer Aubameyang a new contract. And I don't think they should, because, I mean, paying a man Champions League bonus when your club is not in the Champions League, it sounded ridiculous to me. So it's going to be, Germany has sort of whetted our appetites.
And, yes.
You know, people knowing the excitement of the Premier League and the fact that it's going to be in a language that you can hear what people are saying, it's going to be, people are really looking forward to the start of the Premier League. And again, you know, I'm sure, Curtis, you might have noticed that some TV stations that have been showing the Bundesliga have been pumping in crowd noises. And I thought that was interesting, and it might be something that the Premier League will look into.
Actually, I read that they might consider it. They're thinking of pumping in music, believe it or not, from the FIFA 20 electronic game to get a better feel for what is going on, because we're in unprecedented times. I think just to give you an idea, before we go any further, we must say goodnight to Kevin Millard, of course, the veteran coach. I understand he's locked in. Goodnight to you, sir. Thanks for tuning in. But in England, there's some the championship clubs, of course, the championship set to resume on June 20th. They have raised concerns. Of course, the teams in the EFL, a number of them, are in some quite desperate financial straits. And they're basically saying they're strapped for cash as they train. Now, so they're having some issues. We're also told today that as many as 10 Premier League clubs want relegation scrapped. I can pretty much guarantee that's the bottom 10, which will want to fall out of the Premier League, because you know what happens. Even with the parachute payments, it's a huge difference in terms of the TV money. Today in Germany, Timo Werner, who is on everyone's radar, Liverpool notwithstanding, Chelsea taking an interest as well, scored as Leipzig returned to third in the Bundesliga, and Lionel Messi's Barcelona exit clause has expired. He's never leaving, I don't think. And he now seems to be more focused at Barcelona. Criticized heavily the coach in recent weeks, but I think that's just Messi stamping his authority on that team and wanting to win another Champions League trophy. I don't think the current version of the Barcelona team has it in them to win the Champions League, but time will tell.
Definitely, time will tell. I think it's an open competition, but with the kind of break that Manchester City have been given, if they can get their act right, I'm not so sure about their defence. They have a very potent attack. And, with the way the Champions League is going, it might favour them. You know, they might rest players in the Premier League, knowing that the Premier League is over for them. They have the Champions League and the FA Cup to chase, and they might give it their all there, especially in these circumstances where home advantage. Again, let's not forget how many home teams so far have won their games in the Bundesliga. Home advantage is pretty much scrapped. So
I have a question coming in for you, Kenneth. Before we go any further, you can continue to send your messages in 18sports246@gmail.com, or you can call us 434-1790. Once again, 18sports246 or at gmail.com or 434-1790. The question goes, good night, gentlemen. Which team would have benefited more from the layoff in England? Which of the top six teams? The person is saying Man United, with the likes of Paul Pogba, Marcus Rashford, coming back on stream. I think they would have done well. Chelsea, Tammy Abraham, back. I think pretty much everyone had some players who were a bit banged up. The Premier League is hard work. And I think all things considered, we should have a really nice running. Games coming quick and fast. And it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. As you mentioned, pretty much anyone can get the final two spots from a third to fourth. I think Leicester City should hang on for second. They've done very, very well under Brendan Rodgers. But third to sixth, still anyone's guess.
Of course. And the bonus of, if you can get Man City out of the way, there's a fifth spot will be very important. So that's why Jose Mourinho is very much interested in, you know, getting back into the field of play. And when they're speaking about neutral grounds, you wonder where those neutral grounds would be, possibly Wembley. You know, so it will be interesting to see where those neutral games will take place and whom we do favour. But I have some sympathy for the lower teams in the relegation area because it's going to be difficult for them. But they just have to finish it because that's the easiest way to have the least number of litigation after the Premier League has been finished.
Another question coming in. Good night, gentlemen. Has the league been resumed too soon? I think that's a difficult question. There's continual testing in the Premier League. I think they've gone through their fourth round of testing now, and the numbers continue to fall. Games actually don't get running for another, I think, 2.5 weeks. For me, I think England has pretty much got it spot on, and they have the bonus now they can build on the successes or failures of what Germany has done. So I think we are pretty much on stream. Generally, all the football in Europe set to resume over the next 2.5 weeks, with the exception of, is it France, I believe?
France.
Would have already pulled the plug.
Yes, and you can see the importance of money in the decision making.
Yes.
In fact, it's not even been driven by the Premier League. It is the government of the United Kingdom. I believe yesterday they gave the authority that all sports competitions or all sporting events can resume in the United Kingdom so long as they, you know, follow social distancing and, you know, coronavirus preventative measures. But, you know, money is really a big driver. And, you know, you can see that France are there on the side wondering if they've got it wrong. I don't think they're going too fast. I think they're getting it right. But I think the French got it wrong. They jumped the gun.
I think they were looking at their numbers. I think when that decision was made to the numbers in France, the COVID-19 numbers were going a bit haywire. And they were like, okay, we need to pull the plug. And it's understandable. I mean, sport must take a backseat to national safety. But they're now being petitioned to reverse the stoppage. And who knows what will happen. In terms of next week's program, we'll have Eric Levine as our star player. And Beverly Hills will be the featured club. That's confirmation from Paul Mears. We had some questions about what would have happened in the Bundesliga today. Leipzig, they 4-2 win over Cologne. Also wins for Hobro, Horsen, Copenhagen, and Odense. Sorry, that's Aarhus.
Denmark.
Yeah, Denmark, I should say. The first one was the Bundesliga, Cologne and Leipzig. Then the Danish Super League. We also had some Bundesliga games yesterday. And Magda Blach and Berlin 4-1, and Dortmund steamrolling Paderborn 6-1. Usual suspects all winning over the last few days in Germany, and Germany the first one of the real top leagues to resume. A couple of the players looking a bit rusty, Kenneth. A few of them commenting on the lack of fans. Some I've learned to live without it. Some definitely miss the fans. I read a story today. Someone is hoping that the fans can be back in the stadium by the end of this season. I believe that's Italy. I think that's a wishful thinking. But that is also an issue the clubs would want to have resolved, because when you have no fans, you have no gate receipts. And as we all know, no gate receipts, things will get very, very difficult for these clubs in a very, very short term.
Very true. At least Mönchengladbach got some gate receipts from the fans that they had their cardboard pictures. That's pretty creative. They must have gotten some money for that.
Must have. What does this, though, this COVID-19 scenario, in terms of the way forward, it's thought now the money in football will be drastically reduced, both in terms of transfers, both in terms of salaries. From your standpoint, how does this affect the players themselves? The star players will always get paid. But the guys who are mid-range, I think life just got much more difficult for them.
Definitely. You know, for those that are mid-range, you know, I mean, the star players will still draw. But again, look at the news about Aubameyang. Aubameyang isn't the highest paid player at Arsenal. I think he's the second highest after Ozil. But the fact that Arsenal isn't considering a renewed contract for him says a lot. The finances are not there because, remember, Arsenal also has Mkhitaryan, Lacazette, and Ozil and one other player as, you know, very highly paid players. So that would sort of, the clubs will have to sort of think carefully or, you know, move their finances carefully. Barcelona is another club. You know, Barcelona is used to splashing the cash that they do not have. They want Lautaro Martinez, and Inter has told them, well, you know, Lautaro Martinez
needs pay.
Yeah, you know his break, break clause. Yeah, bring the money, and we'll hand him over to you. PSG has done some very good business with Mauro Icardi from Inter, which is
if he behaves himself, which is always an issue. But if he behaves himself, that's a wonderful signing.
Yes, but that's a wonderful signing because he's still potent. You know, he's caught some goals for PSG. So
20 goals. Yeah,
it's going to depress the market definitely, and that's what Jose felt, that is going to sort of change the market, and people are going to be very. That's why when people are, you know, linking Timo Werner to Liverpool, I'm very suspicious. I'm not so sure that it's going to happen. No one is going to. You don't have fans. You don't have anyone. You don't even have match day revenues. Not just fans.
Yeah.
You know, match day revenues in general. People buying merchandise and all that stuff. You know, so finances are going to shrink. So when it comes to splashing the cash for transfers, people are going to be looking for deals rather than big transfers.
Before we go any further, one more question coming in on the possible resumption of the local season. Same thing as the last four episodes. I can tell you nothing as yet. We would have heard last week, I believe it was Friday, in the latest COVID-19 update that the sporting restrictions are still being considered. Nothing as yet for sports in that latest update. We do know golf, road tennis, jogging, athletic training, some of that has resumed, but nothing on team sport as yet. But we did hear from the Attorney General and Prime Minister that the issue is actively being considered. So, fingers crossed, we will get some more Premier League football and some more lower league football very, very soon. But as you know, national interests will trump everything else as we try to emerge safely from the COVID-19 pandemic. Then, as we look at the European scene, once again, a lot of these players also have their eyes on the Euro Championships, which would have been postponed from this year, which will now go into next year. Next year also being an Olympic year, and for the under, I believe it's the under 25 players, next year could really be a very, very important year. You have your usual league competitions, you have Euro, and you have the Olympics all in one season, and this is coming out of a campaign which would have probably started slowly or started belatedly due to the COVID-19 fixtures, because I don't think we're going to finish this extended season, let's say early August, and then have European football resuming in 4 weeks' time, first week in September. I think we may have lost
right
Kenneth.
Here.
Kenneth,
yeah.
Are you still?
Hello, yes, Curtis, I'm right here.
Yeah.
I didn't hear your question.
Yeah. So I'm saying, based on the suspension and the postponement of Euro 2020, we're going to have Euro and the Olympics in one season. So the players under 25 would have a shot at their national Olympic teams, the Euro teams. Then you have the usual European League football. A lot of football is scheduled for next season. And I don't see the season starting on time, given the break we've had for this season and the prospect that it could go into August of this year.
Possibly they might forfeit some of those international windows in order to shorten the season. That's possibly what's going to have happen, you know. And also, they might change the nature of some of the competitions, you know, like the FA Cup, the various FA Cups. Anyway, they already split knockout matches. But they might sort of shorten those competitions or sort of squeeze those competitions so you can play more midweek league games. And also, perhaps also change the nature of the next Champions League to accommodate, you know, shortening the season and getting the league finish by the end of May next in 2021.
Because I have
quite a lot of work to accommodate the Euros. There's so many competitions that FIFA has. You know, I think there's a women's competition that is also kind, and also perhaps the European women's competition. So there's so much going on, and of course, all the years is when they play the under 20, you know, the under 17 and the 19 and the under 21 World Cup. So there's so much to be played, and they just have to find a calendar that will accommodate all those competitions.
And we have two questions to bring us pretty much to the end of today's program. I'll take the first one. It says, good evening, gentlemen. In terms of the local premiership, I was following it This seems to be someone who would have followed it on line via radio and the Detroit 10 coverage. Are BDS and the Wales still the top two teams? Very much so. Maybe league will stop those two teams. We're doing pretty well. Like, so Paradise also up and running. And this one, Kenneth, I'm sure you will enjoy. Would you pay for Paul Pogba if he's to leave Manchester United?
No.
Would you pay his transfer fee?
Of course not. I'll take Jonathan Henderson anytime, any day.
So no room for Pogba in your squad?
No room, no room. He's not. He's a great player, but he's, you know,
drama.
Fabinho does a better job. Fabinho does a better job, but Henderson does the same job, and Milner does the same job without any frills and without any, you know, any cockiness or whatever, you know, any baggage.
Yes. Yeah, I actually like Jordan Henderson. I think he doesn't get his due.
Oh, of course.
In terms of from the non-Liverpool fans, I think he's highly rated by Liverpool fans. But for me, Jordan Henderson is a very, very, very key member of that squad.
I mean, he continues to prove people wrong. You know, let's not forget the three games that Liverpool lost the 2014 Premier League. Jordan Henderson was suspended after playing against Man City. So he missed those three games. And eventually, when Gerrard slipped, there was no one to cover him. There was no Henderson to cover him. So, you know, Jordan Henderson is a very, very much like Liverpool player and captain.
Okay, thank you very much, Kenneth. That's the voice of Kenneth Onyekwe as we shut it down on the international scene and just about to have the final whistle on tonight's program. Good evening to Kevin Branch. I see your message, sir. Yes, we do indeed need to have some conversation. Good evening to Kevin and the entire James and Boots team. And good evening to all of the fans who would have made a contribution tonight, all of the past players, everyone who was a guest on the show, everyone who sent the messages in. And just a reminder, next week, Eric Levine is our star player and our club focus, shining the spotlight on Beverly Hills. This has been Penalty Spot, once again in association with the BFA. And to answer that much asked question once again, still no word on the resumption of local football. As soon as we have a definitive word, we will let you know very, very shortly. Hopefully, we'll get some football very, very soon. So until next week, same time, same station, we'll take another look at the world of local, regional, and international football once again as we bring you Penalty Spot in association with the BFA.